Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, welcome to episode 121 of the podcast. I can't believe we've been doing this for over 2 years now. How you doing? And don't worry, I do have a follow-up.
Good. I'm doing well. Getting ready for the long weekend. Be nice to have an extra day off here.
I was worried I didn't have that. My constituent asked me, like, hey, do we get Monday off? And I was like,
it sneaks up on you sometimes. Yeah.
It's well, like, we get like minimum holidays. Mm. We get 6 days off all year. It's like the big holiday. So yeah, Memorial Day doesn't stick in my head as like one of the six biggest holidays.
No. Yeah. But like Memorial Day and Labor Day are always nice to have that little break. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is like the first day off that we get since New Year. So
yeah, that's the thing too. Like there's no holidays up until So
it's pretty goofy. Well, what I did want to talk to you about outside of baseball, obviously, which is what we're here to talk about for the majority of the podcast. Yeah. But I was on my phone yesterday and I somehow ended up on the Airbuds app, which is an app that allows you to be friends with your friends, and then you can see what kind of music they're listening to. So you just have a feed of all the songs you're listening to. Yeah. I'll let you, the listeners, know. Rick was on a Red Hot Chili Peppers binge the other day, and I'm all for it. I'm a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. But you had a lot of like singles on there, stuff that is not on their main albums. Mm. I know from the Tell Me Baby EP. I really like Mercy Mercy. That's it's a pretty underrated song. You were also listening to the new Unlimited Love album, which was cool. And I think the most recent single they released, which is The Shape I'm Taking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all so good. I was so surprised seeing you like listening to not mainstream Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, that's the thing for me is like I'm not a huge fan of like a lot of their hits, their mainstream stuff. I mean, some of it, I mean, like,
sure.
But there's only so much I can hear, like Can't Stop or, you know, so
Under the Bridge.
Yeah. Under the Bridge too. It's like, yeah, it's great. Good song. Pretty much anything in the like Frusciante's the guitarist, anything in his catalog, him and Flea, I think are just, you know, really great together. So
he's back on those new albums. He's back on at least Dream Canteen. I'm not.
He was on Unlimited Love too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. And you can totally feel it. Like, obviously, like I love the albums that came out before that, like I'm With You and The Getaway. I think they're underrated. Yeah. But there's something like, I think the first song I saw you were listening to Go Robot and I was whoa, let's go. That song's a slapper. But yeah, I think those albums are really underappreciated. But with Frusciante coming back, I think you can really feel the energy sort of pumping up on those songs and just the guitar solos are so much different and just all the licks are so much different. I think it's great. I love having them back. The Chili Peppers are one of my top three favorite bands. So I'm pumped every time they release music.
I saw them. We'll bring it back to baseball. I saw them at Fenway. It was my first concert ever at Fenway actually a couple years ago. That was a really good time. And they'll play like, cause they have a lot of radio, you know, songs that have been played on the radio all the time, but they won't play. They'll play like a, you know, they'll play a lot of their hits, but they'll also mix in some songs. They're like, whoa, they're playing this like on a random, you know, Sunday or Saturday at Fenway Park. Like, pretty cool. So it's a good show.
What actually I've been listening to mostly.
Oh no.
My earphones just died. That's really weird. If I can solve this. Okay. I think I can hear you.
Okay.
We're good. We're saved. Wow, that was really, really lucky there. Okay. But anyway, I've been listening to their cover album from the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performance that they did. So they've got some really interesting songs on there, like Beach Boys and just like stuff that you would never expect them to be singing. And honestly, I really liked it. It's very different, but I that's what I've been listening to the past couple of days. And it's crazy the range that they have and, you know, just all the different kinds of sounds you get from the Chili Peppers. But I'll use your transition from their performance in Fenway that you got to see live, which I'm super jealous of. I mean, Chili Peppers in general, but at a baseball stadium, especially one as historic as Fenway is pretty dope. But We're here to talk baseball. Obviously, we'll run through the news, injuries, and transactions from the past week. Then we'll discuss the three up, three down section where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closing ranks. And lastly, we'll close things out with our main topic as we wrap up the second half of last week's podcast and discuss the unluckiest relievers in baseball. But let's start with the news and notes, beginning with the news, obviously, as Jose Alvarado was suspended 80 games for performance-enhancing drugs. That news actually skipped by me, and the first time I heard of it was when Rick DM'd me on wherever he DM'd me. I was like, oh, no, and I had to just drop him everywhere.
Sunday, like at noon, I posted on Twitter. I was at a movie. We never do this, but we went to a movie at like 11 a.m. on Sunday, and then like the news broke at like 11:20, so I got out of the movie at like 1:30, and I saw, and I didn't even see the news. I went to, like, I have him on every roster, and I just start seeing, like, S-U-S-P next to his name. I'm like, what's going on? Did he, like, throw at somebody and get suspended for two games? No, full 80-game suspension for PEDs. So, yeah, brutal for me and for a lot of people. I mean, I think I had him on, like, 80% of my teams.
Wow.
Yeah, so all of a sudden I'm not in such great shape for saves. And I wonder, like, we talked about him last week and like how Romano was starting to get some saves. I always wonder, like, do teams have like some sort of inkling as to like when, because there's sometimes some tells. I forget, like, someone else who got suspended, it's like
they started, I know what you're talking about,
limiting his playing time. Yeah, it's like, did they know? Or like, because I was just weird that like Romano was getting saves when Alvarado was pitching so well. But yeah, now it's Romano's role to run with. I don't think 80 games is, you're not keeping him, because and there's almost, I don't think there's any place where you can hang on to Alvarado. I don't think they have like a suspension spot.
I'm pretty sure he's ineligible for IL spots.
Yeah. So it's, you're not keeping him for 80 games. It's, then the way Romano's been looking lately, it's probably, you know, he's probably not going to give up that role anyway. So, yeah, tough for everyone who, you know, went in and got Alvarado early in the season. But what can you do? Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty unfortunate, but hey, people who have Jordan Romano are feeling pretty good. I had Romano in one league. It was one of my 15 team leagues and I dropped him after like 3 weeks.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
It did make sense at the time, but I've been regretting it ever since, as he started to move into the closer role even before Alvarado was suspended. So now we're in a position where, you know, I could have seen it coming, but also I couldn't have seen it coming. All right.
Yeah.
Our next bit of news involves Justin Martinez, who is expected to return from the 15-day IL on Friday. Obviously, people listening to this recorded will be confused by the way that I said that, but we record on Thursday nights. So as of now, this is a future bit of transaction. So therefore, it is news in my mind. So Justin Martinez should be back tomorrow over the weekend. Time to drop Shelby Miller, huh?
Probably. I don't know if they're, you know, even before, because we haven't seen Martinez without AJ Pollock. Like, there was already like kind of a committee going on there before Martinez got hurt. We never really saw him get a chance by himself for more than like a couple days, because the injuries between him and Puck were so close to each other. I do wonder if they'll, you know, limit Martinez a little bit and maybe give him some more time. So I think Miller could still factor into some saves, and he's pitched well. It's kind of hard to kick him out of the role, if you're in like a 12 team standard head to head, you probably don't need to roster Shelby Miller after this weekend, because I think Martinez will get the bulk of the saves. He's looked really good in his rehab. He's throwing 101 again, but I don't know, maybe it's still worth just hanging on to Miller for like a week or two, see how things play out with Martinez. And because it's just like a shoulder inflammation, dead arm or whatever it was. Like, it obviously can go away, but it can also come back at some point relatively soon. Maybe he's out longer after that. So I don't know. It's still a little bit risky with Martinez, but you're going to want to roster him if he's throwing 101. He's going to be a top 10 or 12 closer, you know, at this point. So obviously activate Martinez or pick him up if you have him, if he's available still. And for Miller, yeah, you can probably move on if there's better options. If there's like a Will Vest or someone else you can kind of target. Like Daniel Palencia, I don't know, maybe that's a guy you take a chance on over Shelby Miller at this point. So yeah, that's, but if you're just like dropping Miller for another setup guy, I would just hold on to Miller.
Sure. All right, let's move over to our injuries, starting with Danny Coulomb, who was placed on the 15-day IL by the Twins with a forearm extensor strain. Coulomb has been incredible this year. I'm pretty sure when I checked earlier today, he had a pristine ERA, and that's what I'm seeing, zero ERA across 16 and two-thirds innings for Coulomb on the year. Unfortunately, he'll head to the IL for at least the next couple of weeks. Any fantasy implications here, or just RIP Coulomb for a month?
Yeah, I mean, there's no real other lefty in Minnesota, so I'm sure Brock Stewart and Louis Varlin will, you know, factor into some more holds as a result of this. Really one of the better additions. I still can't believe Baltimore gave up on him, even with the injury history. And obviously it's showing now, but like, there's, you're still getting good when he's on the mound. You're getting good results from him. So I think, you know, it hurts them a little bit, but that bullpen's still really deep. We've talked about them. I mean, from, you know, it starts with Duran and Jax at the top and then going to Varlin, and Brock Stewart's been really good this year too, and he's not throwing as hard, but the sweeper's sweeping. So it's and even like Jorge Alcala is looking better, and he's a guy who, if he is right, if he's on, he's pretty lights out too. So they'll miss Coulomb from the left side for sure, but hopefully it's a short-ish stint for him and he can get back in June.
Yeah, anytime they have all this extra stuff with the injury sort of trying to explain exactly what it is, I get a little bit more concerned, because I'm like, if it was just a forearm strain, I guess I'd be pretty concerned. But yeah, once they start getting into like the exact muscle or tendon that they strained or whatever, I'm like, oh gosh, that doesn't sound good. But yeah,
so good or bad. Coulomb,
exactly. Yeah, it's usually, it's either something really small. Like when I hear adductor strain, I'm like, oh no. And it's just like a groin strain. Like Teoscar Hernandez just had one, was back in 10 days. Maybe I need to do more medical research before I start freaking out.
Gonna have a doctor on the show. Yeah.
Dr. Mike, let's get him. Yeah. All right. Next, we've got Kirby Yates, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a hamstring strain. Lou Trevino was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. That corresponding move is somewhat interesting because Trevino pitched for the Giants earlier this year. There's another example of a pitcher going from the Giants to the Dodgers or vice versa. It's always very interesting to see pitchers or players in general switch teams when they're rivals. So we saw that with Blake Snell as well. But is Kirby Yates heading to the IL right now? The Dodgers bullpen is absolutely destroyed by injuries, but hey, all the best for Tanner Scott, who really has absolutely no competition in that closer role now, which is not something I would have thought I'd be saying before June.
Was Trevino with the Giants?
With the Giants. I don't think pitched.
It was with the Yankees. Yeah. All right. I mean, I'm not betting on Lou Trevino, even with the Dodgers and their ability to get the most out of relievers and pitchers in general.
He was dope when he was on the A's.
He had a good, like, got a little bit of a run, but you know, a lot of smoke and mirrors with him. Just like three different fastballs type of guy.
Sick.
But I hope, I mean, yeah, first of all, the Dodgers bullpen that's injured, it would be the best bullpen in baseball. Yates, Evan Phillips, Kopech, Trinan, Edgardo, Henriquez, Brusdar, Gratterall. I mean, pretty filthy right there. But those are all righties, and now this bullpen is just lacking right-handed talent except for Ben Kasparius. But I don't really know. They are not, they've been bouncing him back and forth between like long relief, maybe a starter. You know, I would like to see him in a setup role for the time being, because it doesn't, I mean, Kopech's throwing again, it doesn't sound like any of these guys. Maybe Yates will be back relatively soon, but Trinan and Phillips probably won't be back soon, so they're gonna, if they don't go and acquire a right-handed option in the bullpen, they're going to need someone here to step up. And I think Kasparius is the best stuff of the group by far, when it's between him and Trevino and Luis Garcia. So I'm hoping for big things from Kasperius moving forward. Definitely in a short innings stints, he like looks lights out for the most part. You know, fastball can get up to 97, 98. Big strikeout numbers too. So I'm hopeful Kasperius gets a big bump and holds leagues from this.
All right. That's a result of Kirby Yates heading to the IL. Next, we have Chris Martin, who was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder fatigue. Cole Wynn was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Somewhat concerning for Martin as he was pulled from back-to-back outings early, the first time with elbow soreness and then this time with shoulder soreness. So now he'll head to the IL and honestly couldn't be worse timing because Luke Jackson is absolutely falling apart and Chris Martin would be a perfect replacement for him, but now he'll spend at least the next 2 weeks on the IL. And so really we can just hope, I don't know, maybe Robert Garcia or Jacob Webb can step up and save the Rangers from the villain that is Luke Jackson, the closer.
This team in general. Yeah. There's bullpen in general. All this team, I mean, they went into Yankee Stadium and scored like one run all week.
Nice.
But yeah, like Robert Garcia is starting to worry me a little bit. And it's not necessarily just the results, but like he has just stopped being able to strike people out. Obviously, Luke Jackson is an issue. Everyone below them is an issue, though, too. I don't trust anyone in this bullpen right now. I don't know. I know there's been talk about David Robertson and like Philly, but like, why is he not like he was really good with Texas last year? Why is he just not?
Yeah,
can we just I know they're not they're just a little, you know, tight on money, but like I don't know, find a way, because this bullpen is really, I mean, it might be talent wise it's like might be the worst bullpen in baseball. I mean, I know the Rockies are here, but like the Rockies at least have some talented arms in that bullpen. Like this is really dicey here with like there's not a lot of swing and miss in this bullpen right now.
Yep, not looking great in Texas, especially with Chris Martin heading to the IL as well. Next, we have
Porter. I was going to say, with Martin, too, because like last week it was like an elbow soreness, and then this, yeah. Or was it shoulder?
It was
either
it
way,
was back
shoulder
to back
and
outings.
Elbow. Yeah. And it's like that's definitely not good, whatever's going on exactly. There. So I don't think they have a timeline for him, but it's probably not anytime soon we're going to see him.
All right, that's Chris Martin. And next we've got Porter Hodge, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain. Ethan Roberts was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but awful timing here for Porter Hodge as he was finally starting to get the opportunities to take over as the closer for the Cubs with Ryan Pressly basically on timeout for the past couple of weeks. But Pressly starting to stabilize a little bit. And now with Porter Hodge on the IL, Daniel Palencia, that is, got the team's first save in the past week. He also got the save opportunity on Monday, but he blew it. So it looks as though Palencia might be the favored option on the north side.
Yeah, and I think that's deserved for sure. And even that blown save on Monday was tough. He was one strike away from getting out of that with a clean outing. Left the fastball a little bit too much over the plate, and then, you know, double, walk, double, and the game's over. You know, Palencia is a guy we've been talking about for a couple of years now, is like kind of like following in that, like Jeremy Estrada, like young, hyped up Cubs reliever who has closer stuff. And this year he's putting it together. And I mean, there's other guys in this bullpen. I mean, I wouldn't go right back to Ryan Pressly. I know he's pitched better lately, but it's not like he's missing bats again. It's just like he's getting a little bit lucky now. You know, Brad Keller's pitched really well. I thought they might give him a chance. Drew Pomeranz coming from out of nowhere, hasn't allowed a run yet. So I think those three guys are probably in some form should like form some sort of committee here, unless they want to just give Palencia the role, which would be pretty fun. I would definitely you know, chase that and save only leagues and probably in save hold leagues too. But yeah, we're not quite sure if it's going to be Palencia. I mean, Roster Resource has Pressly right now as the closer. But yeah, Palencia's gotten the last two chances. So I feel like by default, he is the guy to target right now.
I totally agree. Next, we've got Fernando Cruz, who was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation and MRI ruled out structural damage for Fernando Cruz on his shoulder. So that's good news. He's probably going to be back in 2 to 3 weeks. But while he's out, that will open up some holds. He's been really good for the Yankees this year, 38% strikeout rate, sub 3 ERA. So they'll definitely be missing him. I think this means Devin Williams is probably going to see higher leverage opportunities. They've been sort of pitching him in like the seventh a lot. So I think he's...
Yeah, it's starting to work back into the eighth. Yeah.
So I think this will allow him to push up that ladder even more. Obviously, they just want to see him continue to perform when he's on the field so that they can have the confidence to send him out there and not just get immediately booed by the Yankees fans. But what other fantasy implications do you see as a result of Fernando Cruz's IL assignment?
I think, pretty much just for holds leagues, it definitely boosts Mark Leiter Jr.'s role. He already has 6 holds on the year, which is just one less than Fernando Cruz anyway. But I feel like now Leiter Jr. is definitely going to be, factoring in as that seventh inning guy for them. Even with, Jonathan Loaiza goes back, so that's fun. But I don't know what we'll see from Loaiza yet. I'm still going to kind of temper expectations there. This has been a while. I think they have a pretty clear cut, Leiter to Williams to Weaver 7-8-9 situation right now. I mean, Williams has been really good over the past 10 or so games. And Luke Weaver, I forget what the number was, but he has a save. He has 2 saves and a win over the past 3 days, and it's all in like 17 total pitches in 3 days. Nice. So, yeah, Weaver continues to cruise, make things look easy.
All right. Well, that's the Yankees bullpen, and you covered our first transaction involving Jonathan Loaiza, who seems to be throwing a mile per hour slower than he was prior to getting injured. So that's not great. Actually, a mile and a half. He's down to 96 and a half on the fastball. But Loaiza really only had that one fantasy relevant year anyway. So I wouldn't get too hyped about him in fantasy circles. Same with this next guy, Jose Castillo, who's traded by the D-backs to the Mets. Then in a corresponding move, Daniel Nunez was optioned to the minors. The corresponding move is probably more notable than the trade, but the only reason I'm bringing this up is because you called it.
What?
You said the Mets were going to get a lefty from
it is a lefty.
You said a different team, but you were close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is like Arizona is kind of full of lefty.
Oh, you said Houston. That's what it was.
Yeah, I said like Houston close. I mean, I've liked Castillo in the past. It's been a minute though since he's actually done anything at the major league level, so of relevance. So we'll wait and see. He's definitely a talented dude. I mean, he had that first year in San Diego. I thought he was going to be like this, turn into this one of these young up and coming relievers, and then just kind of injuries and wow, he really hasn't. He's pitched 2 innings since his rookie season in 2018, 2 innings total until this year. So it's been, I mean, talk about Drew Pomeranz's comeback story. I mean, Jose Castillo hasn't pitched since really 2018.
Oof. Well, hopefully he figures things out with the Mets. That would be cool. They're definitely in need of some reliable left-handed relief pitching.
And the Mets have done a really good job with, their whole bullpen, all those relievers, they've kind of plucked from out of nowhere and turned into reliable guys. So maybe it works for Castillo.
Yeah, that would be dope. Okay, next we've got Forrest Whitley, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He had been out for a few weeks with a knee sprain. He went on the IL almost immediately after being activated, but mostly bringing him up because the Astros bullpen has seemed to be in need of more pitchers. However, all the guys there are performing really well.
Yeah,
it's like a bunch lefties of names you don't know, and they all got sub-3, sub-2 ERAs. But I expect Forrest Whitley to become a significant part of that bullpen, mostly because they don't have a lot of right-handers.
Yeah, I mean, maybe over time. He pitched yesterday. It was not great. 4 walks and a hit and 2/3 of an inning. Nice. Not what you want to see, but... No. Yeah, like you said, I mean, it's really Caleb Ort is like the only righty there that's kind of trustworthy. So doors certainly open for Forrest Whitley. I would imagine they make some sort of move to, I don't know who they're going to add. Oh, Brian Abreu, too, obviously, is there. But I'm sure if they're still contending in, you know, a month or two, they'll be adding a righty to that bullpen.
All right, that makes sense. That's Forrest Whitley. Next, we've got Andrew Kittredge, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He underwent arthroscopic knee surgery in May, but will return to the Orioles bullpen, which is looking a little bit stronger. I mean, the fact that they've got Yennier Cano performing to a 5.06 ERA and still have enough guys there to support that, I think is good. But yeah, this team has been terrible this year. I don't know how many hold opportunities Kittredge is going to get for a team that's in last place. But he pitched very well last year. I think was at least in the top three amongst holds leader on the holds leaderboards, if not number one. Would you expect him to quickly climb up and become the top setup man in Baltimore?
Yeah, top one of the top two setup man. I think Cano needs a bit of a break and just needs to get removed from high leverage at the moment. Brian Baker's been their best reliever by far all year, and he deserves to be their eighth inning guy, if not, you know, ninth inning guy, the way Bautista's looked lately. So yeah, Kittredge should factor into some holds. I mean, he's a, right now he's a better option than Cano or Sir Anthony Dominguez. But yeah, it's a disappointing season from a lot of the names in this bullpen right now.
That's right. And to round things out, it's been a disappointing season from Yoel Pion, so much so that the Brewers have decided to remove him from the 40-man roster by designating him for assignment. So right now that is pending. We'll see if Pion is optioned to the minors or claimed by another team, but his 8.35 ERA through 18 and a third innings pitch this year suggests that Pion is likely to end up being a free agent or heading to the minors. I don't know if he can deny an option at this point.
I feel like a team might take a chance on him because he's put up some decent years, but there's too many other good options right now in the Brewers bullpen, so it makes sense for him to be for them to be let go here.
Totally. All right, next we'll move into our three up, three down section to discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're entering our second section of the podcast to discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. We've dubbed this the three up, three down section. Let's start with our risers and begin with an obvious one in Jordan Romano, who's overtaking Jose Alvarado as the Phillies closer. And I think he gets, there's a ton of reasons to boost him up. And I think one of the obvious ones is that no more competition from Alvarado.
Well, yeah, that's the easy one. That's why he went up like, I don't know, 20 spots or so. But he's also just been pitching really, 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 you know, good lately. He's pitching better than I actually thought he would at any point this year. It's been, you know, really a tale of two halves from him. The first half of the season was terrible. Couldn't command anything. We know the velocity was down, but his command was just like really, really bad as well to go along with it. And he was, his slider was just pretty much useless. So, you know, now he's turned things around, and this is going into Tuesday. So, you know, he had a 37% K minus walk, over his past eight innings. You know, obviously really good number for a closer. 1.37 Sierra over that time, not allowing any runs. He pitched today, had a save of two strikeouts, no base runners. It's Colorado, but I mean, still, we'll take it. So yeah, I have, you know, I'm starting to kind of buy into Romano being the Jordan Romano from his Blue Jays days. It's, you know, the velocity's a little bit down, but the command's better, and that slider's just going to carry him as long as he is allowed to be the Phillies closer. Because, you know, we still don't, as far, when was the last time the Phillies actually had like a closer that they stuck with for a year? You know, even they've had some, I guess Carlos Estevez Kimbrel for the most part, Kimbrel to Estevez. Yeah, I guess, but you never know. They might, you know, Strom might factor into a couple saves too. So that's why I'm a little bit hesitant to put Romano anywhere inside the top 10 for now. But, he's if he's still available in your league, you got to go pick him up now because it's going to be too late after this weekend.
Totally. Yep. Performing better. Closer role is now open for him. And now that the because that closer role is open for him, there's less competition. Because I mean, like, even before, he's performing better. Let's say he's put into the closer role, like the Rob Thompson explicitly says, like, we're removing Alvarado from the closer role, putting Romano there. Just Alvarado's presence makes it so that, like, you have a less confidence in Romano. But with Alvarado out of the picture, I think that's three now, three factors that allow Romano to move up the closer ranks. Next, we've got Emilio Pagan, who's been pitching very solidly for the Reds. He got three saves earlier in the week, and he's currently sporting a near 30% strikeout rate and a 3.5 ERA. So Emilio Pagan continues to hold on to that closer role, and it's like, it's so unexpected, honestly, because it was just so clear, like, oh, we'll put one of the, like, most reliant guys on home run to fly ball rate in the worst home run ballpark in baseball, and then he just has an incredible year, and you want to know why. Oh, he's given up a ton of home runs. He's just dope like that. A 163 BABIP is really why.
Yeah. The home runs are obviously going to still be a concern there, but I do think that he's gotten to the point where he's pretty safe as well, because I don't think there's much. I mean, Graham Ashcraft has looked awesome the past month. He's starting to show why, like, we got kind of hyped up about him as a potential reliever. Obviously, Luis May is good. The thing I worry about with May, though, is that he's never put up good numbers in the minors. He's never had a strikeout minus walk over 12% at any level. So I don't know if the command is real. I feel like that walk rates could skyrocket eventually, and that's fine. He'll be a really good reliever down the road, but I feel like, similar to like Abner Uribe, who, like, first year came in, was
2 years ago,
like,
it was bad.
He was throwing hard, and like, his stuff was moving everywhere, but he wasn't commanding it. So I feel like Pagan, at least, you know, this is a, you know, potential for him to get paid after the year. It's in a contract year. You know, he's missing bats with his cutter and splitter now. He's kind of added a third pitch to factor in. But yeah, the home runs are always going to be an issue, especially in that park. And now that, once the summertime gets rolling and we start getting a little bit more humid weather, balls can be flying out there. But I still believe in Pagan, just because the bat missing ability right now. And I don't think they're going to move May or Ashcraft into that role, you know, both guys being, May being, you know, a rookie, and Ashcraft being relatively new to the bullpen. It would have to take something like a pretty significant, you know, streak of Pagan blowing games to make a move there. I think Francona has started, like, finally trusts him, and that's, you know, Francona trusts a closer. It's going to take a lot to get him out of that role.
All right. Well, that's the Reds closer. And now we'll wrap things up with David Bednar, our last riser. And honestly, I tore into Don Kelly on first pitch a couple days ago when he pitched him in the seventh inning and he allowed two runs. So goofy. I was like, hey, Don, I heard you're new here. David Bednar is the closer, and he actually doesn't like pitching in the seventh inning. And when you do that, especially when they're losing, they're going to give up. He's going to give up runs on purpose just to show you, hey, don't throw me in the seventh inning. And you know what? He listens. He listens to the podcast. He didn't tell me that, but the next day, David Bednar was in the ninth inning. And then you know what I said that day? I said, oh, David Bednar's pitched on back-to-back days. I think Dennis Santana gets the save the next day. Guess who got the save the next day?
I know. But that's because Bednar wasn't available.
I'm just saying, and that was because I told Don on first pitch, I said, hey, Don, David Bednar has pitched on back-to-back days. He doesn't do well on a third day in a row. You got to throw Dennis Santana today. And he listens to the pod. I'm telling you, this is not like a story. I'm just telling you as like a fact of what happened. So
you're basically running the Pittsburgh
Pirates. I'm the manager of the Pirates. Nice to meet you.
No, I don't know what to do in Pittsburgh. I feel like both guys are rosterable. It's like a poor, it's like a poorer version of like what's going on in New York. With Weaver and Devin Williams, I'd probably rather those two guys, or at least Williams. But Bednar, I mean, it's hard to ignore what Bednar has done since he came back. You know, 39.2% K rate, 36.4% CSW, 1.29 Sierra since he's returned. That's over 12 plus innings. And Santana's been good, but he's not. He doesn't miss bats like Bednar does. He's gotten really lucky. Just a 13.8% K rate, 4.20 Sierra since Bednar's return. So if you're asking me which guy I would like rather, you know, put into that closer situation based off those numbers, it's definitely David Bednar. But I understand, like, he has, you know, obviously struggled in that role. He's blown some games. He's got a couple of losses. But I think he's, you know, at some point you got to let him go. You got to let him just, you know, try, you know, roll with that role. And, you know, you're best off. Same with the Yankees. The Yankees' best situation is Weaver being their high leverage guy and what Williams being the closer. And I think the same thing goes with Pittsburgh, with Bednar being the closer and Santana being kind of the guy they can bring in to get them out of jams. So I think they'll move back to Bednar eventually. The next week or two will be very telling, though, once they, I mean, if they can pull, you know, string together a couple wins in a row.
Yeah, I mean, Don might get confused this weekend with Trevor on the podcast, but Trevor told me I need to cover him on Saturday night. So there's actually, Don, if you're listening again, I'm gonna be doing that Saturday night podcast for First Pitch. So it'll only be 2 days, Don, don't worry. I'll be back telling you what to do with the bullpen in no time. But those are our risers, as those guys rise up the list. Others need to fall to accommodate them. So let's start with our fallers, beginning with Felix Bautista, who has really struggled over the past week. Just looking at his past week of games, every single outing, more than 20 pitches, a loss, a blown save, just not doing well, which it's weird because he had sort of entered this week pretty stable. Yeah, he was steady for the last month or so.
He had looked like he turned the corner. We had him on the up list last week. And then now, the walks have become an issue. 5 walks over his last 3 outings. And I wonder if some of it has to do with, like, the situations he's been in. Because I know one of them, it's been kind of weird situations. And obviously Baltimore is just, things are just kind of unraveling there, it feels like. And it's from the top down. It's, you know, their line guys in their lineup are struggling who don't usually struggle. Bullpen's now struggling. That, like, Cano usually never has issues, and he's having issues. Bautista. So hopefully it's just like a little bit of a fluky rough patch and he can, you know, straighten things out. But yeah, if you just look at the overall numbers for the season, it's very un Felix Bautista like. Just, you know, the walks are not too surprising to me, but like the lack of strikeouts and swing and miss has been an issue. And like the velo had been getting better. It was trending up. It's still like in the 97 range. It's not terrible. He should be able to work with that. So trending down, but I'm still not out on Felix Bautista or anything, but this whole Orioles organization right now just feels very stay away worthy, I would say, for most fantasy aspects.
Yeah, it's not going great in Baltimore. Our next faller is Kenley Jansen, who turned it around in the second half of the week with a trio of saves, but that ERA is up to 5.28 on the season. And did you had him in like the top 10 last week or something?
No, I mean, I had him in like the close. Top 15. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like we talked about how like Raisel Iglesias is kind of becoming like more of a Kenley Jansen. And I feel like it's like Iglesias is like last couple year Kenley Jansen. Now Kenley Jansen of today is more of like Carlos Estevez or Kyle Finnegan, where he's going to get save opportunities, but that's about all I can confidently predict for him. I don't think he's not missing bats anymore. 10.2% swinging strike rate is fifth worst among active closers, with Carlos Estevez, Ryan Walker, Kyle Finnegan, and Luke Jackson in front of him, which is like, that's the group that he is with now. It's the Finnegans, Jacksons, Estevez, you know, CSW is only better than Robert Suarez. Robert Suarez, another guy who's not missing bats really well, that at a good high clip right now. You know, Pete Fairbanks is another guy who's kind of in this category right now where it's very middling stuff. Doesn't get any chase anymore. The velo's not there. So yeah, that kind of grouping with like the Fairbanks, Finnegan, I feel like Suarez is a little bit better despite the low CSW marks. I feel a little bit more confident with his ability. You know, the stuff's still able to throw 99 except for today when he was like sitting 96.5. But yeah, Jansen is just kind of very middle, a lot of blue, just like a, you know, when you look at his profile, you're going to see more blue than red these days.
Yeah. He's a mid pitcher, but he's a closer.
Exactly. So yeah. He's him. And if you want to roster, if you feel comfortable with Jansen, Estevez, Finnegan, go for it. I won't tell you no, but I personally am just not going to be invested in those guys.
All right. And our last faller is Pete Fairbanks. You mentioned him in that grouping with Jansen. Been a rough week for him. No save opportunities for a while. Like you said, the swing and miss has been missing from Fairbanks' game. What else has you pushing Fairbanks down your closer ranks?
Yeah, it's just it's out of his control, the lack of saves, but
yeah.
The lack of swing and miss is not, I thought maybe it was going to get better over time. The velo started to creep back, but it's not changing anything. There's not a lot of metrics to get excited about with him like there used to be in the past. And yeah, you know, he's already at 20 pitches or 20 innings. So do we only have 20 more innings, or is he actually going to break 45 innings this year? It's like,
yeah,
we might be, that's a good point. I mean, there might not even be much left for him this season. So
trade.
They really should.
I mean fantasy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's in, and I would say that whole like just grouping with Fairbanks, and I would put Suarez in there too. You know, Fairbanks, Suarez, Jansen, Estevez, Finnegan. If you can trade them high now, that would be my recommendation. I'm sure one or both or a couple of them are gonna prove me wrong and be great for the whole season, but
yeah, probably Finnegan.
It's probably definitely Finnegan. He did blow a save tonight. But I'm not happy about it, I swear. it's fun. I mean, I got a lot of negative feedback about David Bednar and how excited I was about him this week. So I don't know, because people feel like Kyle Finnegan's more important or a better fantasy asset, and I don't know, maybe that's true, but I'm just looking more towards the long run where I feel like Bednar is going to be better from June through August or June through September, whereas, you know, right now Finnegan's better, but you got to look long picture.
Totally. Well, that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Jordan Romano, Emilio Pagan, and David Bednar, and our fallers were Felix Bautista, Kenley Jansen, and Pete Fairbanks. Next, we'll head into our main topic, but first we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're heading into our main topic where we're going to discuss the unluckiest relievers in baseball. And the way we've gone about determining this is taking a pitcher's ERA and discovering the difference between their XFIP and Sierra and finding the players with the largest differences. Let's get right into it, though. By looking at these guys, I think we'll be able to determine players that we can expect to perform better moving forward, and thus you can either buy low or pick them up off the waiver wire, etc., or hold on to guys that you're wondering whether or not you should be dropping. The first guy on the list we talked a lot about, but that's Jordan Romano. He's brought his ERA down a little bit. I think he's in the fives now, but definitely unlucky this year. We already discussed how he's looking much better and now is in the closer role. So definitely somebody you should be buying low on. I'm sure it's going to be difficult now with the new situation in Philly, but Romano is certainly somebody to keep your eye on.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it already, but yeah, that's a huge difference between his ERA and Sierra going into this and going to today's game. So yeah, it's his ERA is down below 7 now, finally, but he's pitched a lot better than that, especially lately. You know, all of his bad outings were early April, mid April, latest. So Romano's turned a corner, and I think we can trust him. It's same with, you know, other, and there's other guys on this list like David Bednar. It's like they've turned a corner here, and these guys have proven in the past that they can be really good closers. So I don't really have any concerns with Romano outside of health. That's the thing with him. It's just, can he stay healthy now for a full season?
Totally. All right. Next, we have Jeff Hoffman, who is currently sporting a 5.48 ERA and somehow a 1.53 XFIP. That is humongous, enormous. I do not know how it's so big, but then you look at his home run to fly ball rate, it's at 57%. Yeah. So literally more than half of the fly balls that he gives up end up today over too. The fence. Wow.
Does that count today's game? Because that same thing happened today.
I'm pulling from pitcher list. I don't think it's been updated.
So it's not going to count today's. Yeah. Yeah, just crazy bad home run luck this season. And even if some of it's not luck, it's like the skill issue, you want to say, it's still super lucky that it's that high, or unlucky.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then after today's game, I don't know what Hoffman's ERA went up to, but I'm sure it's over like 6 now, maybe. So great buy low opportunity if you can, like, if you can flip like Kyle Finnegan or Carlos Estevez for Jeff Hoffman in some world, some league. Like, I mean, that just would be awesome. I mean, you take that and run. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure, depending on the, you know, who's rostering them in your leagues, you might be able to get away with something like that. So Hoffman's a great buy low opportunity right now.
Totally. Especially because he's still got the closer role. I was sort of concerned that with the struggles, they might just remove him from the role to try to get his confidence back. But I think they must be looking at the same numbers we are.
Yeah. And they're looking at this plus something even more, you know, more in tune with, his actual, you know, results. So
sure.
I mean, Hoffman's going to be fine. The home run luck is just crazy, because he's like, it's like either a home run or a strikeout. He's like the three true outcome of pitchers. It's the weirdest thing I've seen.
Yeah, but he doesn't really walk people that much.
He doesn't really walk. It's just a home run.
Yeah, it's just strikeout or home run.
Two true outcome. So yeah, I'm not concerned. And like I was going to say, Jimmy Garcia hasn't exactly been great lately either. He's been fine, but nothing spectacular. So I feel like they're going to be comfortable. I don't think Hoffman's in danger of losing his role at all here.
I agree. All right, next we've got Griffin Jacks, who is currently sporting a 4.98 ERA, very unlike him, but that comes with a 1.68 XFIP, which suggests that Jacks is going to be much more fortunate moving forward. He's currently sporting the highest strikeout rate of his career at 37%, paired with the lowest walk rate of his career at 5.3%. I think all of his struggles can be blamed on, once again, Hotel, the holy trinity of equating luck. His BABIP is over 400. His home run to fly ball rate is 27%, and his left on base rate is 64%. All of those terrible marks in the bottom 30% of baseball. So Jacks really just needs some better batted ball luck moving forward, and he's going to be just the same old Griffin Jacks as before, and maybe even better, suggested by his new and improved strikeout to walk ratio.
Yeah, and similar to Romano, that was like most of those struggles were really early in the season, and he's, you know, figured things out, turned a corner here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no worries at all about Griffin Jacks. Even in I think he's once again viable in save only leagues just because of the ratios and strikeouts you're going to get from him.
Yeah.
So just back to Hoffman real quick, because I had to look this up. He's allowed 20 hits, and 5 of them have been home runs so far, and he's. Last year, he allowed 6 home runs, the year before 3 home runs, and the year before that 5. So he's like at his, you know, max per season right now.
We're not even a third of the way.
We're in May. So hopefully that just means that he's not going to allow any more home runs. But I don't know. It's hopefully the luck starts turning back in his favor. And, you know, I think, again, Jeff Hoffman, buy low if you can.
Griffin jacks by low as well. And on the next guy, Devin Williams has a 6.88 ERA on the year. The xFIP is at 3.87, but his FIP is at 2.80. I think there's some indication here, a lot of indication outside of Williams' history of being one of the best relievers in baseball that suggests he's going to bounce back. But also you have that added support of like, hey, Devin Williams used to be super dope. I don't see why that should change unless his stuff is completely different. And I haven't seen anything to suggest that.
Yeah, it's we talked when he was removed, then we talked about how the stuff's still the same. It's just, you know, something either he's tipping pitches or something isn't, you know, something weird is going on here. And it looks seems like they figured out and, you know, the team's not going to come out. No one's going to say what was the issue, but they figured something out because he's been much better in May. He's allowed, you know, he's only allowed runs in, let's see, one game in his last 11 outings. And the strikeouts are getting back to where they used to be too. You know, 5-7 strikeouts over his last four outings. So that with no walks too, that's the big thing. Only 3 walks in the month of May. So I think they asked Boone on Tuesday about what, you know, is Williams going to get his job back? They asked Williams about it too. And they're kind of non-committal about what's going to happen there. But I still think we see Williams back in that role by the end of the month if he keeps pitching well. And Weaver's been awesome too. It's, you know, and it's a tough situation for Boone. And both guys are free agents. Like, you know, I'm sure they're looking to get paid, obviously, in the offseason. So we'll see the dynamic there. Williams obviously wants to be the closer. He said that he doesn't care as long as they win games. And that's what anyone's going to say. But he wants to be the closer. He came in to be the closer. He wants to prove he can do it. So
he's better than Luke Weaver.
He is. Oh, no doubt. I mean, Weaver's pitching really well lately. But we talked about him last week as being one of the luckier guys. And, I think the Yankees are at their best when Williams is getting the ninth and Weaver can be that high leverage guy who can kind of float around and pitch when they need him to pitch.
All right. Next, we've got David Bednar, who we've already discussed plenty today, but he's got a 5.02 ERA that comes with just a 2.05 xFIP, which suggests that Bednar has actually been pitching really well under the radar. And if you look, he's got a 33% strikeout rate. That is the highest of his career, and a 4.8% walk rate. That is the lowest of his career. And that's probably not even indicative of how well he's been pitching since returning from the minor leagues. So David Bednar looks like he's going to get the majority of save chances in Pittsburgh, and it looks like he's going to bounce back pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, the majority of save chances in Pittsburgh.
Rick, don't worry. I know you got Don right here.
I know you heard Don Kelly's ear. But yeah, I mean, it is good to see that he pitched the ninth and Santana pitched the eighth the other night. And then, you know, Santana got the save the next day, but that's because Bednar wasn't available. So I think Bednar is in line to get their next save, but we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it starts with when we talked about his issues early in the season, just being able to throw that curveball for a strike just to mix that in. That's been a huge addition, huge help for him getting back to being really good again. So, he's going to still get barreled a little bit, like his fastball. If he doesn't locate it well, hit or sit on it, it's still pretty hittable. But he's still, you know, their best reliever talent-wise. So I'm hopeful for Bednar to have a good second half. Again, he's probably either someone you can get for really cheap or he's sitting on your wire still maybe. So, yeah, I'd buy into a second half resurgence from David Bednar.
All righty, me too. Next, we've got Raisel Iglesias, who's really struggled this year. He's looking at a 5.89 ERA, but it comes with a 3.73 xFIP that suggests future better performance for Raisel Iglesias. I think the thing we're seeing here, though, is that the floor is rising and the ceiling is falling. I think he's a guy who's obviously getting older. We're not going to see the same peaks that we saw in the years past. I mean, this is the highest xFIP of his career that I'm able to see on pitcher list, but he's seen his ERA sort of consistently rise. And while his stuff has diminished, his strikeout rate has fallen. There's lots of factors pointing to Raisel Iglesias becoming less of a pitcher he was before, but not this much less, not 5+ ERA less. I still think he's going to be solid, but with that new floor, I mean, do you think it's possible that somebody like Pierce Johnson or somebody like Daisbell Hernandez, who's performing better on paper than Iglesias, to somehow take over that role? Or do you feel confident that the Braves are looking at the numbers we're looking at and are like, hey, he's going to be fine. Keep him in that role.
Yeah, I think he'll get a very long leash here. You know, he's obviously dealt with some bad luck here. He is more of a 3-ish ERA guy at this point, but that's still fine. I mean, compared to their other options, I know Pierce Johnson's been pretty good for the most part. Dylan Lee from the left side, but then it's like Daisbell Hernandez has been like the luckiest pitcher in baseball this year, but he's pitched well. So you know they have those guys, but I feel like Iglesias would have to, you know, either have an IL stint or just like melt down for a whole weekend to lose the role here. So I'm pretty confident in Iglesias keeping the role, but I'm probably not someone I'm looking to go buy low on, because I don't know if you're going to be able to, because he was a top 70 or so pick this year in a lot of leagues. So probably going to still cost you a lot to get him. And I don't think he's worth chasing at this point. So if you have him, probably best to hold him and hope for the best, but not someone I'm looking to target right now. I was able to pick someone, dropped him in a save holds league I was in, and I picked him up, but I don't even know if I like that. It's like, you know, I'm not even sure if that in a save holds, if that's like, you know, that's still a little bit on the fence for me.
Sure. All right. That's Raisel Iglesias. Next, we have Mason Miller, who is always electric, but he's got a 4.50 ERA on the season. Don't worry, he has not changed. 2.38 xFIP for Mason Miller, suggesting that he's still the same old guy. He's got a career high swinging strike rate this year, career high strikeout rate. He's throwing a few more balls. He's walking a few more guys, but I have a lot of confidence that Mason Miller is going to bounce back and end the season with a sub-3 ERA, and the ERA estimators think the same.
Yeah, the walk rate's been weird for him, I feel. I'm not sure, because it's just not like it's unlike him, and it's you know, it's mostly been recent outings too, because he had only one walk up until April 28th, and now he's walked 8 guys over his last 6 outings. And this is, you know, not too far off from like kind of how he started last year. Remember, I mean, I feel like he was more dominant for a little bit longer last year, but he did taper off rather quickly, or not, you know, quickly, but I would say from like June on, he was a very good pitcher, just not like elite RP1, you know, overall type pitcher. So I wonder if we're getting like that kind of like slow down from him earlier in the season. I mean, he's dealt with arm injuries in the past, so obviously that's why he's in this closer role. But it is at least good to see that he's still striking out guys, even in these rough outings he's had recently. Strikeouts have been there. So yeah, I'm not overly concerned. I still think he's the guy you drafted. I guess he's a decent buy low opportunity if you can get him, but he's probably still going to take a lot. So probably just a guy, you know, if you have him, you hold on to him and try to buy low, but you're probably not going to want to give up what it's going to take to get him.
All right. Next, we've got Mason Montgomery, which is a great pairing to follow Mason Miller. They share the same initials. I've been calling Montgomery Mason Miller from the left side. And so far, 5.40 ERA suggests he's not been great, not living up to the potential that his stuff has, but xFIP is on the same boat that Rick and I are on, thinking that Mason Montgomery is a lot better than the ERA suggests. His xFIP is at 3.39, and Montgomery stuff is just so dope that I think he's going to be awesome no matter what. But the ERA estimators also suggest and support that idea.
he's just really raw. He doesn't the stuff he has the best stuff in any reliever in baseball, probably. Just the command isn't there yet. He doesn't know how to use it yet. He's just kind of throwing these fastballs wherever they go, like just kind of throwing, not trying to locate at all. Doesn't really seem to be any rhyme or reason when he pitches. It's just, you know, throwing 100 from the left side. Hopefully it's in a good spot. It would be nice to also see him like get a little bit of a better off speed offering. But I still think, you know, if you're in a holds league and 12 or more teams, I still would hold on to him, and just eventually it's going to click, and you want to roster him when it does, because there again, there's I don't think there's a reliever in baseball right now that has better stuff than him. So hoping that I thought he had a little stretch a couple weeks ago. I'm like, all right, it's finally happening. And then, you know, 3 earned runs this past week, walked 2 guys, and like all of a sudden he's got 3 walks in the last couple outings. So he'll get there, Montgomery. Just got to be patient. You got to be willing to be patient, which I know is tough in this line of work in this game. So
totally. Yep, that's Mason Montgomery. Next, we've got Kirby Yates, who's got an injury. He's on the IL. We talked about him earlier, but he's also got a 4.34 ERA that is way too high. If you look at his xFIP of 1.72 in the 98th percentile there for Kirby Yates, he's clearly carrying over what he had last season. And that's but we're just seeing the opposite end of the luck there.
Yeah.
Because last year we saw Yates with a 169 BABIP, 9% home run to fly ball rate, and an 88% left on base rate. This year completely flipped, 385 BABIP, 43% home run to fly ball rate, 72% left on base rate, but all the skills are the same. He's even walking fewer batters and striking out more batters. And yet the ERA and WHIP are way above last year, but that's how much of an impact luck has in small sample sizes from relievers. So I think Yates is somewhere in between the 1.17 ERA and the 4.35 ERA. But what we're seeing thus far is definitely somebody who's been unlucky.
Yeah, it's the like water kind of it's overcorrection almost from last year's luck. Now it's overcorrected itself to him being super unlucky, where in reality he's just somewhere in between, which is a really good reliever. So hopefully when he gets back, I mean, hamstring injury, I don't think it's anything serious with his hamstrings. So hopefully he gets back, luck gets back on his side. He should, like we talked about earlier with the Dodgers, he should return before Trinan and Phillips. So he should jump right back into a setup role. I'm excited for Yates if he can get back in the next couple weeks. People will probably see that ERA and be like, oh, he's having a bad year, but yeah, he's really just been unlucky, and he's missing bats at a crazy rate right now too, or before the injury. So yeah, definitely scoop him up, and if you can stash him on your IL in the holds league, that would be ideal at this point.
All right, that's Kirby Yates. Next, we've got Emmanuel Clase, who pretty much same boat here. Super lucky last year. Obviously, he's got incredible stuff. He's a great pitcher. But last year, we saw sub 200 BABIP. This year, it's over 400, and thus his ERA has risen from 0.61 to 4.50, but it's accompanied by a 3.03 xFIP that nearly matches the 2.93 xFIP he had last year. So I really don't think much has changed here for Clase. He's still the closer in Cleveland. And if that BABIP starts to turn around, starts to head back towards the mean, then Clase is going to have an ERA that reflects his skills.
Yeah, but it's still not, it's still above 3 though, Sierra and xFIP markers for Clase, which is still fine. It's just, again, you're not going to get the guy you drafted when you drafted him really early. And again, this is not someone I don't think you can really go looking to buy buy low. I feel like people are still going to have a high price on Clase because of the name and what he did last year and the year before. So if you drafted Clase, you're likely stuck with him, and he should be fine. He's not going to live up to the expectations when you drafted him super early in your drafts.
Sure. All right. Next, we've got Kenley Jansen, who we also discussed. He's been very unlucky. 5.28 ERA, but it comes with a 3.68 xFIP. I don't think there's anything skills-wise that points to Jansen, you know, being super unlucky, but he's got a 30% home run to fly ball rate. I do think this is sort of just what we're going to see with Jansen. Obviously, we got a small sample size, but as he gets older and his stuff diminishes, you never know when you're going to have an outing where his stuff just falls apart, his body just can't support him or whatever, and he has blow-up performances that inflate his ERA with the small sample, and he's unable to deflate it because he just doesn't pitch enough.
Yeah, and even still, like, that xFIP's still at 4.17. I just kind of threw him on here because of, like, just trying to get some closers, and it's like he's been a little bit unlucky, but it's still not very exciting what's going on right now of Kenley Jansen. So, and I feel like if anything, those numbers, lately in the past month, it's definitely, he's been a little bit worse too. So if we're looking at trends, he's not trending the right way. You know, still, like we talked about, it's like a guy who's going to definitely get save chances, but everything else that comes with it, up in the air.
Totally. All right. Next, we've got Ryan Walker, who is really not been that unlucky this year. I mean, it's probably turned around in the past week since we first made this list. But Ryan Walker's got a 5 ERA, but on pitcher list, he's got a 4.63 xFIP. So I don't know. I'm still on the Camilo Doval wagon, hoping that he gets a real opportunity in San Francisco at some point. But honestly, like, the real answer right now should probably be Randy Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, Rodriguez has been their best pitcher all year. I talked about him a little bit in the holdup today because he's not going to get a chance to close out games. It's whatever, but he is a closer. He's closer stuff. So, but I mean, Duvall has, and we talked about Duvall being lucky last week and him not missing bats, but lately he has started to miss bats. His strikeout rate's starting to go up. He's been a lot better since May started. More like his old self when it comes to swing and miss. So, yeah, I'm kind of getting back into the Duvall train, getting hyped again for him. But I still think Randy Rodriguez is the best pitcher in that bullpen. I mean, Brian Walker is probably the fourth best option they have right now. I mean, behind Duvall, Rodriguez, and Tyler Rogers, right? So, Walker's looked better, and I guess he's fixed some things. He's tweaked some things lately. So I'm not giving up hope on him as a closer yet, but it is kind of crazy he's gotten this long of a leash considering the guys they have behind him. And he's not like a guy who's had like 4 years as a closer.
It's no.
Like he had a good half year as a closer last year. Yeah, like, but he's still getting save chances, so I'm not out on Walker yet, but I don't think he's going to be anything special. I don't think the strikeout rate's going to be where it was last year.
All right. Next, we've got Seth Halverson, the rare Rockies reliever that is unlucky. 5.30 ERA, but it comes with a 3.85 xFIP. The thing is, I don't think xFIP accounts for ballpark. Unless it does, and then I just sound stupid.
I thought xFIP does, and that's part of the difference between that and like FIP. I'll have to double check that, but like Halverson, I kind of put on here because just like Colorado still looking, searching for, and he was looking better and then he got blown up on Tuesday of this week. I'm like, well, it goes back to square one. but I still want to believe in Seth Halverson. Maybe it's not this year. It's probably not going to be this year because of the rocky start, but I feel like there's a good closer in Seth Halverson. Maybe when the Rockies, I don't know when the Rockies are going to be good again. And that division's so brutally tough too. It's like, it's hard to compete with anyone in that division. So, I'm going to be searching for Rockies closers, even in no matter how desperate you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Halverson can still be someone who, you know, maybe you can roster him in NL only league at some point and not totally hate yourself for it.
Yeah, that would be nice. To go back to xFIP, I think I was right about that one. It adjusts home run to fly ball rate. It adjusts for league average rate of home run to fly balls. And my whole point here was that XFIP doesn't account for BABIP, which is incredibly inflated in Coors. And I think a lot of people think of Coors as like, you know, big home run ballpark. It's going to be a bunch more home runs. It is more home runs in Coors, but the effect on BABIP is so much more significant than it is on home run to fly ball. So XFIP accounts for home run to fly ball rate, but it doesn't account for BABIP. Yeah. It says that's owned by the pitcher. So I think in my opinion, that's not owned by the pitcher a lot of the times. And it can really fluctuate a lot depending on where a pitcher's playing, who's behind them defensively, and what kind of stuff they're throwing. Right. In this case, pitching for the Rockies in Coors with that defense behind him, his BABIP is already automatically going to be like at least 350 or something, which is not accounted for by XFIP, which honestly, if you now put that all together, I think that means his XFIP should be lower.
Yeah, I mean, that defense is pretty good behind him. That's the one thing that they have going for him. But I mean, I think Tovar is a pretty good defender, and obviously Doyle in center. But yeah,
and McMahon's a gold glover.
McMahon, yeah. So yeah, I guess it could be lower.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not doing that in my head. I would think that if it were accounting for BABIP and adjusting BABIP to league average, then it would bring down Halverson's BABIP and would thus reduce his expected ERA.
Right.
You got that one. I saw that. That locked right in.
Yeah, like that locked right in. I know. I was thinking, yeah, Sierra takes into account ballpark factors.
Okay. And is his Sierra lower than his XFIP?
By, where is it? By like 0.2, 0.12 points. So
not
a little bit.
Not
a little bit.
All right. We're getting close. I'm going to be a scientist someday.
Right. Your science degree.
Yes.
But yeah, moving on.
Sure. Ryan Zephyrjohn.
Ignore the Rockies relievers for now. Okay.
Sure. All right. Ryan Zephyrjohn is our second to last player. We pumped him up a couple weeks ago when we were talking about pitchers with the best stuff, guys who stood out in underlying metric, and Zephyrjohn was one of those guys. And I think a lot of people may be confused by that, seeing a 4.76 ERA. But if you look at his ERA estimators, XFIP has him at 3.26. This is Ryan Zephyrjohn. He's got incredible stuff, striking out a ton of guys. Top setup option in LA. I don't know what there is not to like about Zephyrjohn other than like the Angels pitching development is just not ideal.
That, yeah, it's he has struggled the last couple weeks. It's like, I mean, yeah, is he going to just progressively get worse because he's with the Angels? That would be a bummer. But yeah, I bumped him down. I dropped him down the list today in the hold up because, you know, it's been a little bit dicier lately. He hasn't missed as many bats. Strikeouts have gone down, but he still looks like he's still like a top 30 holds option for me. Still has really good stuff. And yeah, he's been unlucky. Really, the only thing that has been bad is the ERA and whip, and that walk rate could be a little bit better. It's at 10.8% right now, but you know, Abner Ribe's walk rate's at 10.8% and he's been lights out. So 10.8% is not the worst walk rate. You can still be productive with that, especially when you miss bats like Zephyrjohn can and Uribe. So, you got to worry long term about Angels pitching development, and is he actually going to get better from here, or is it just a slow decline?
All right. Our last reliever who has been unlucky this year is Yennier Cano, who sports a 5.06 ERA, but that comes with a 3.26 XFIP. I was confused why they keep throwing Cano in high leverage situations, but now I am much less confused. He's been very unlucky this year, and what stands out to me first is a 50% home run to fly ball rate. He's another guy who's just every time, just like Jeff Hoffman, every time a ball goes in the air, just flip a coin, whatever it lands on, it could be, it's either going to be a home run or the other, which is a knock.
Yeah, and it's a weird because I mean Cano's more of a, he's a sinker guy too. It's
yeah, you'd expect ground balls,
and yeah, and his ground ball rate's always pretty good. But yeah, home runs have been wild this year for him as well. I was at actually the first Orioles game I ever went to. He allowed 2 home runs, I believe. So I was there to witness some. That was actually his first bad outing of the year, so I might have had something to do with that. I don't know. I'm just saying. but yeah, I do. I mean, we've always worried with him, like the bat missing ability. So if he does start, you know, balls are going to be put in play on him. He's going to have the turn. Luck is going to be a big factor in how successful he is. But I still think, yeah, obviously that home run rate's going to come down. He's not this unlucky. He's not going to be this unlucky all year round. But yeah, like we talked about earlier, Kittredge coming back, it's and Brian Baker being really good, it could be bad timing for him keeping a, you know, a high leverage role in Baltimore, because I'm sure, you know, Kittredge, they're paying a lot of money. They're going to give him a chance to get some holds, and Baker definitely deserves a chance too. So Cano might be, you know, relegated to low leverage duty for now, but someone to keep an eye on for, you know, the second half at some point maybe.
Alrighty. Well, that will wrap up our list of the unluckiest relievers in baseball. To recap, we discussed Jordan Romano, Jeff Hoffman, Griffin Jacks, Devin Williams, David Bednar, Raisel Iglesias, Mason Miller, Mason Montgomery, Kirby Yates, Emmanuel Clase, Kenley Jansen, Ryan Walker, Seth Halverson, Ryan Zephyrjohn, and Yennier Cano. That will do it for today's episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me at I Am Rick Graham on socials, working on just the usual closing time coming out on Tuesdays, and then Hold Up on Thursdays, and Save Plus Holds coming out Friday afternoons.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. Most notably, you can catch me live on the First Pitch podcast Sunday through Wednesday nights, or recorded Monday through Thursday days. And then obviously on the In the Pen podcast every single week. And you can find more of my work over at baseballhq.com. But that'll do it for episode 121 of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.